Would you introduce yourselves, please?
Sure. I'm Kelly Darlin.
I'm Jesse Darlin.
Nikki Darlin.
Amazing. Okay. Amazing.
So far, so good. Did we get it right?
Yes. So we're going to cover everything in one question. You ready?
No.
Wait, this is one question.
Already a question. You're out.
we started this in the parking lot. Whatever this was. How did you meet? Can we talk about Ticks? Are you really a country band? Clogging? Can you answer all of that in one question and then we're done with the interview?
I can, but you can't air it. So.
And that's it. You see, that's the end of that. We're not going anywhere near any of those.
Great.
For the rest of the time we chat.
Thank you.
Folks can read the bio to find out how you met. They really don't need us to talk about that. That's a waste of time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So here's what I want to do. I want some revisionist history, and I want you to feel free to lie.
I was working in this bar, and Nikki was working at this strip club next door to it. And it actually, she was a bartender, though. She wasn't a stripper. And so, you know, we just kind of met because we would hang out. She would come hang out at the bar that I worked at afterwards a lot. And so we used to run around together and do that and, you know, mess with the strippers and stuff. And then, you know, like try to make them lose their game and stuff while they're stripping. And then we actually, one day, I was driving Nikki over to her friend's house because she doesn't have a car. And we actually ran into Kelly's car, and it was just it wasn't a bad wreck or anything, but she got out of the car, and
it's a really
we
sweet
like,
car too. It's one of the VW station wagons.
And we were just like, oh my gosh, we're so sorry, you know. And then she was like, it's okay. And then somehow we ended up talking about music, and we were like, come over to our house and let's play some music.
So. I don't know whether to believe you or not. That was so good. Does anybody else want to take a crack at it? Or are you willing to go with that story?
That's what happened.
That's really what happened?
Yeah.
See, I don't even know whether to believe you now. Sure. Wow. I love the line in the bio that says that you're more Stiff Records than Carter Family. Now, do you know the Stiff Records?
Yeah.
You know the slogan, right?
What is it? I don't know.
You don't know it basically says if it ain't stiff, it ain't worth fuck.
Yeah.
So it's all good music, right? So what happens when you people waste so much time in places like this?
What does it even matter?
I know.
People
are obsessed.
Break
with
down
that.
Into some genre because it really, if you like us, that's great. If you don't, fuck off or whatever. You know?
Yeah.
Such language.
And the thing is,
sorry, excuse me.
That's okay.
Rockabilly, like Elvis, it started out and it was like country and blues mixed together, and that's rock and roll. And then people are so hung up on the fact that we're kind of country. Kinda... You know, we're like, that's rock and roll. That's what it is. Like, that's how
it's like
it started,
definition
you know?
Of what rock and roll is like other influences. Like,
so when you play a rock club, like most of what you do on tour, I mean, you don't play a lot of country clubs or country clubs, you know. That'd be kind of nice. But you know, can you tell the hipsters versus the posers from those who get it? And do you ever just say to yourself, you know, I'd like to just shoot half of them and the other half of them, you know, are paying attention here?
Well, I never want to shoot. I mean, not literally, but I never want to say get them out of here just because if they like it, they like it. So, you know, at least they're there and they are supporting and they're buying records. You know, if they don't get it, they don't get it. But, you know. I don't know. I think that, there's definitely, it's just, there's a difference between the conversation with people when they, you know what I mean? Whenever they say
dude, it was awesome to see three chicks playing.
Yeah, the people that are worried about genre are actually a highlight.
Yeah, the people who are worried about genre are mostly
they're music fans and they're trying to figure things out, and also they want to relate to us and talk to us about music. So they're just wondering. This is a lot of times they'll just say, "This is what I heard. Where are you coming from? Yeah. You know, is this am I picking up what you're putting out? You know."
And a lot of interviewers and people. The mostly people who work in the music industry are the ones that are most obsessed with the genre. You know, so how would you describe your sound? It's I don't want to describe it. Listen to the album. I don't understand that question, you know.
It's like asking a painter, So can you tell me about what you were thinking when you made this painting? Yeah. Like, how would you describe it? It's like, why don't you just, it's up
look
for interpretation.
That's the whole
like,
point.
Yeah.
Everybody can take something different from it.
But what were you thinking when you made this painting? That was my next question. It was right there. Country was the bass of this band before you added a drummer, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, when you come right down to it, that is where you started. And it was in your blood, and how could you not, right? Mm-hmm. So where was that exact moment where you said, all right, you know what, we love this country thing, but we, what was it that you decided that you wanted to have a career? Was it that you were bored after being, you know, bred on all of this stuff, which you really weren't, you know?
Yeah.
What was the switch? Because I know with me, there's always something when I make a left turn at 50,000 miles an hour, there's always a, you can't really identify, but there's always a switch that flipped. Is there anything you can identify that you all turned to each other and said, you know, we need to take this to the next level?
I remember a distinct moment. We have a closet in the hallway where we keep all of our stage clothes. And I think it was a show we were going to play in Nashville or something that we had booked. And we were going through the clothes, and they were all gingham, like puffy, like hee-haw dresses. And Nikki was like, I am not wearing this crap anymore. So that was definitely a turning point.
We decided to get a drummer. So that
I think, no, I remember, like, it was definitely like when we were in this, like, we were like, okay, we're going to record a record. And
we want drums.
We want drums. And then we were like, we started recording. I had never, this is the first record, you know, we've ever recorded. I think it's, you know, all of ours. So really exciting. We just had so much fun in the studio working on songs. And they're like, these are, you know, songs that we've been playing for a while, just acoustic, the three of us. And we're like, there are a million things we could do to every single one of these songs. And we just like got, you know, really like deep into it and like really excited about recording. And, you know, we're just like, we could play in the studio all day, putting all of this like fun stuff, you know, and like, you know, making these, like mixing these songs up a little bit, you know, make, not necessarily like with an intention to make them, you know, more rock and roll songs, but just that we were having fun. We were like, we want to make these songs really, really fun because we are having so much fun making, like recording them and, you know, kind of like altering these songs we've been playing for so long, like as acoustically. So,
yeah. And it wasn't our first time playing with a drummer, like on the album. We have a friend in Memphis who played with us a couple, like every time we play in Memphis,
right.
And she mm-hmm. recorded this little EP we were working on that we never released, but she even then it was still like the shuffle, like, you know, like the backbeat, you know, like it wasn't, it was totally still
doom,
country,
doom,
yeah.
Doom,
and so we,
as opposed to,
yeah, and so we, when I think there was just a point whenever we started with the album and we started, I think it was really like the realization that we were like, we can't have, we like the drummer thing situation was a problem because everyone that we would play with was doing that little like country shuffle.
Yeah,
we're,
like,
and we were just like,
band.
We don't want that. Like we want, we didn't really know what we wanted, but we were like, we want something new. We want something that's not that to go with this music. And so whenever we started working with our producer, he really just was like, what about this beat? And we're like, oh my gosh, this is amazing.
You were magic.
And after that, we were like, we have to, you know, like we want drums. And after playing the drums, and we're like, we want to start with the electric guitars. And it just kind of grew from there, you know. And it's just so much fun just to be able to go and be loud and dance around and not try to be like nice Christian girls or something, you know.
It was your manager JT's suggestion, I believe, to go to New York and work with Jeff Curtin. Was it his suggestion? Is he responsible?
Yeah, absolutely.
And when you first met him, did you think he was off his rocker?
A little bit.
Which one?
Jeff. Well, either
no,
one.
Both.
I didn't think Jeff was off his rocker. I was the most nervous about going to New York because we just tried to do that EP before and it didn't work out. And
so like,
I was like, are we really going to fly to New York and like spend all this money to record with someone we've never met and we don't even know if it's going to work? So JT flew him down to meet him. And I immediately, like after, within the first hour, I was like, I can't wait to work with this guy. He's awesome.
Jeff
because,
Curtin.
I mean, we also, like, there was so much, like planning before we even went into the studio with him. Like, we sent mixed CDs, like, back and forth. And we're like, we love this about these recordings. Mm-hmm. And
actually, we
these
sent
sounds.
Mixed tapes.
Mixed tapes.
He's like, I don't even think we have a tape player at our house.
Had you ever even heard Vampire Weekend, and did you care?
We had not.
No, and no.
Our manager played them for us, and we were like,
that's cool.
Yeah. But it wasn't really about, you know,
it wasn't about the genre or the type of music. Or even, I mean, what we were listening for was the production.
That didn't make me nervous, though, because I was like, I don't really like this, so we're going to work with this guy. But, you know, like, after meeting him, I realized, like, it wasn't.
Well, you already knew you were not young kids trying to do, you know, indie power pop.
Or whatever you call it.
Like, you know, you weren't like, we want to be an instant buzz band, and this guy's going to make us that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Exactly.
You know,
we wanted to make a good album and work with someone that was going to be fun, because that first EP that we recorded in Nashville, that was, I mean, it was with a friend, too, but it was stressful. And it was like, why are we making, why is this collective art making, like, why is this a stressful thing in our lives? Like, this should be really, I mean, it's work, but it can be so much fun. And I've never had so much fun being in the studio until we worked with Jeff. And it was like, this is why people make records. Like, this is so awesome. Like, every day of it was great. Mm-hmm.
So I figured out my faves are Red Light Love and Hung Up on Me. Those are the two tracks that I gravitated that I thought were the hits.
Cool.
However, who's that knocking at my window? Every time I listen to it, it gets more trippy and more psychedelic. And I think that's an example. I want you to talk about the album.
Is your record slowing down?
Yeah, in that kind of, well, but I want you to talk about
that. Have you
heard
it backwards?
I probably have. You know what? We could spin it. We turntable right here. We could spin it. But what I want to get to really is one of the things that I kind of heard is you did a lot of prep with the mixtapes, but also the way this album happened is you didn't go in and say, okay, it's a concept. You kind of did do it piece by piece, did you not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about that, because that must have been really cool and really scary at the same time, because you're trying to figure out what the whole is going to be. And that's with a W, by the way.
It was a big question mark.
You know, where it's all going to add up.
Well, we would do it like, we would go up for like 10 to 13 to 15 days and do like 5 songs at a time, you know, or, you know, 3 songs. And we spent, you know, like 4 months of the year in New York, not recording the entire time, but just there, like in the process, trying to record. And so it was really hard, because we recorded these 5, and then, you know, you go and play shows and you grow and you come back and you say, oh, we got to re-record these because it's not good anymore. And
re-record.
And, you know, or it's, you know, like, we like this, we're going to add to it. And then we record this next set of songs and we're like, whoa, do these go with this? And it was really like by the end of it. I mean, not the end, because at the end it started coming together and we were like, wow, this is going to be a real album, you know?
It's going to be, but still didn't know.
Yeah,
like,
we didn't
know. Like, the track order was a big
Tell the final mix, or tell the mixing.
It was fun.
Like, after Jeff finished the mixing and sent it to us. But we definitely, like, but there was a certain point where I remember being like, I don't think these songs even fit together. Like, you know, I don't think they go together as songs in general. Like, the writing, much less, like, you know, like, I was like, Red Light Love, that's like a rock, that's straight rock and roll song, you know, and then next to, like, Hung Up on Me or Snaggletooth Mama, I'm like, okay, that, I mean, not Hung Up on Me, but Glass to You, but yeah, I think that Jeff really was, we were immersed in recording it and doing our parts, and he was a really helpful in the way that he could just sit back and have the big picture in his mind the whole time, you know, and he really was a important factor in helping us, like, add these little, like, quirks to each song that helped the whole album, like, piece together, you know.
No matter what it ends up sounding like, let's not be meek about our decisions. Like, let's make a bold album. Like, this is our debut album. That's why it's self-titled. It's a bold statement.
We wanted to punch them in the face on the first note of the album, you know? Like, we wanted people to be like,
well, that song.
Oh, a little country album. Those darlings, oh, they're from Tennessee. It must be cute. And then put it on, and then, like, they're like, whoa, what's that, you know?
Oh, wow, dang. Who came up with that?
A 4-year-old.
Yeah.
That's where they all come up with the best stuff.
Her name's Evie, and our manager's best friend, Rob, it's his daughter, and she used to, she would just walk, like, she would be walking around the house and she would just turn a corner and she would just stop and go, oh, wow, dang. And we all thought it was hilarious. So,
however, now, was it your management who was smart enough to get you distributed by somebody could get it out there? Because
well, that was a major decision in how to put out the record. Was I mean, we weighed all of those options, and one of them was work with a larger label, and then we considered, or maybe even a smaller independent label, and just kind of what those options look like and what that means in terms of how the record gets distributed and what control we have over that. And a big factor was, what do you need a record label for? Marketing and distribution. So we had to have that in place to start our own label. We had to know that if we're going to do this on our own and maintain the, you know, the masters, which is was very important to us, then we've got to have distribution in place.
A DUI or die. So
I
can't imagine that. Well, I already know, but I'll have to ask. And I can't imagine you girls party at all on tour at all.
No.
You're teetotalers completely.
Mm-hmm.
Am I supposed to believe you?
Yes.
We drive the wagon.
The song, come on, tell me, who wrote it and how did it come about? And
we all wrote it.
You all wrote it. So who contributed what part? Should we go through the? We could do a little schematic for the lyrics.
Kelly? We were listening to a lot of Beach Boys and didn't have a license, so we couldn't drive and leave the house. So we just listened to a lot of Beach Boys
in the winter. It was very depressing.
Yeah, we had beach parties.
We had beach parties in the middle of the winter because it was just too cold outside. It was too cold to even like have a fire out back. So we just stayed in and listened to a lot of records. And so that's kind of where like the DUI, that whole thing came about.
It was very,
that's very Beach Boys.
It was a
influence.
Lot to do with
first gear, it's all right.
Like the song on the album, I think, had a song that we were like, okay, Jeff. This one is like, you know, Be My Baby or whatever, you know, and that one I think we were like, be true to your school, okay? Just think that. Like, we wanted to be like.
With all the sound effects.
Like, when
and
the, you know, like the car crash and like, like.
Oh, would this be a good time to talk about the backup vocals?
No, we should know. There's a secret about the backup vocals, but we can't tell.
Anyways.
Excuse me. You know, it just occurred to me. I'd love you to talk about the backup vocals. I hear there's a secret there.
Walked right into this one,
guys.
You have
to listen to it a million times.
You're walking into a lot of them here.
On my birthday, about, I think it was 2 years ago, me and Kelly and my boss at the time
dun dun dun
went out. I was like, already have been drinking. We're like, we'll ride our bicycles to the bar. We're gonna go get a free pitcher of beer because it's, you know, your birthday, you get a free pitcher of beer. So drink a pitcher of beer, you know, go to a gas station, get a 12 pack, and it's got like a little like milk case, like, you know, on the back of my bicycle. So I stick it in there. We're like riding back to our house and we're gonna hang out, and you know, I'm just being belligerent, screaming at Kelly, like, Kelly, you're such a bitch, blah, blah, like, standing up on my bicycle, totally wreck. And then Kelly and my boss, Bingham, came back, and I was on the ground, unconscious, with blood leaking from my head. And
meanwhile, I'm back at home making Nikki a birthday cake.
Yeah, so they called the ambulance, and it came, and they cleaned up all the beers that had like fallen everywhere.
Well, except
I guess when they picked me up to put me.
We didn't touch her because she wasn't coming to, and I wouldn't wish a hospital or ambulance bill on anyone. But she was bleeding from her head, so we called 911, and they show up, and they know what's up, they know what's going on, and they roll Nikki over, and there was a beer. Can
Beams that it was
right.
Two full beers.
No, it was one. Really? It was one. It was right between her breasts, and it just rolled away. And and after we'd already like hid the 12 pack behind this bush and everything, they were just like, all right, we'll meet you guys at the hospital. Don't drive yourselves there.
Apparently, I don't remember any.
And the secret about the backup vocals is
there's no secret.
We got the paramedics to come and sing backup vocals on the record.
Seriously?
Yeah. That we had to like kind of bribe them. I put up a huge fight in the hospital.
They're not credited, I take it.
No.
Just know.
No, actually, that was a condition of it. Yeah, they were like, but we don't want to be.
We're not on this. Please.
And so we've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. So what I want is two of your songs is the bread. And then you're each going to pick a few other songs by anything that you want to play, any artist in between.